When a young man is driving home one day, he has no idea he's about to drive right through the world of the weird. And then we take a look at the story of a young boy and his father out camping. The idea is for some father-son bonding time, as well as hunting the local wildlife. But this father and son are about to realize they aren't the only ones hunting in the woods. Today on Dead Rabbit Radio. Hey everyone, welcome back to another episode of Dead Rabbit Radio. I'm your host, Jason Carpenter. I'm having a great day. Hope you guys are having a great day too. I hope you guys have some fun plans for the weekend. I think I'm going to go see that new Ghostbusters movie, Ghostbusters Frozen Empire. I didn't watch the last one, though, so I gotta do homework, right? I gotta watch that Ghostbusters, so this next Ghostbusters makes sense. But someone who always makes sense, whether or not I see her or her prequel, running into Dead Rabbit Radio Command right now. Everyone get on your feet and give it up for our newest Patreon supporter, Ari Cole Relationship. Woohoo, yeah, She's running on in, dressed up as a Ghostbuster. Ari Cole, you're going to be our captain, our pilot this episode. If you guys can't support the show financially, I totally understand. I really, really do. Just help spread the word about Dead Rabbit Radio. That helps out so much. Tell your friends, tell your family, tell everyone you know. Dead Rabbit Radio is your favorite paranormal show. Also, Patreon supporters do get ad-free versions of the episode. So that's another benefit. Plus, access to the Discord and access to the live recordings. Ari Cole, I actually don't know if we're doing any ghost stories this episode, so the Ghostbusters outfit might be a little too much, but it is always good to be prepared. Who knows what rambling rants I may go on this Friday's episode. Ari Cole, let's start off. I'm going to toss you the keys to the Jason Jalopy. We're going to leave behind Dead Rabbit Radio Command, drive us all the way out to Montana. We're about to meet a young man. We don't have his real name. We're going to call him Tony. And one day he is driving as well. He's driving a car down this dirt road. Now, this dirt road, he's super familiar with. He's driven through this area a lot. It's right by his house. Super familiar with this patch of road. He's traveled it so many times that you know it like the back of your hand. Like, literally, that's why we have phrases like that. You could draw a map of it. When he's driving down this road, he's driven down so many times before, and he gets to this point where there's a sharp right-hand curve. But right at the curve of the road, like, as he's turning the sharp right, like, right there, there's a broke-down truck right in the road. Like, right on the side of the road. And he sees a man laying down on the ground. And Tony's like, oh my God, like, car accident. Something happened. And he's driving, but again, the momentum of making his right-hand turn, all this stuff is happening really quickly. He sees this truck. He sees a man laying on the side of the road. And to Tony's best guess from what he can see, the man's injured. And then off to the side of this road, there's this really tall, thick grass. And Tony is making this right-hand turn. All this stuff is happening so quickly. The man on the road, the truck, the broke-down truck. And he sees, sticking out of the tall, thick grass, an arm. It's just waving for help. Now, Tony, all he can see is the arm because the foliage is so dense at this part. But he gets the intent, right? Someone's trying to wave him over. You can just imagine the horror, the other person's point of view, non-Tonys of the world. A guy, imagine you get in a horrible car accident, you get ejected from a truck, you land in the grass, you were hoping to land in a swamp, it's a little more cushioned. Or maybe a pillow factory, but you land in the grass and you know no one can see you. And you're just sticking your arm up trying to get someone's attention. You're in the middle of nowhere. But Tony doesn't stop. He just keeps driving. And he's thinking in his head, he goes, I'm not going to pull over. For whatever reason, we'll get into this in a second. He goes, I'm not going to pull over. What I'm going to do is I'm going to go to the local sheriff's station. Because as Tony is driving by this and he's continuing down the road, he's like, I'm going to not take care of this myself. It's the middle of the day. It's when we really feel safest. It's very close to his house where we feel the most relaxed. It's our turf, our territory. He didn't go into a lot of details as to what the thought process was. He goes, but I'm watching all of this stuff. He goes, part of me thought, that's not a car accident. That's not a car accident. And he just kept driving. But he didn't go to the sheriff's station. He ended up going, I'm just not going to report it. I'm not going to tell anyone about the... He did get a funny feeling about it, but if he's wrong, it's at least one injured person that he could see and another person who may have horrible injuries waving from the grass. He doesn't go to the cops. In fact, he says when he has to drive home later that night, he is going to take a different route home. He's not going to go down that dirt road anymore. He's not going to go down that dirt road again. But all night long, it was eating at Tony. He's like, dude, I have a feeling that there's something up with that. And again, he didn't go into details as to why he felt that. But he goes, something's not right. But if I'm wrong, I don't know if I could live with myself. Like, if I made the wrong judgment call and two people died, or even just one person died, the other person did land in the swamp, a little swampy region of the grass. He goes, I can't deal with that. So he decides the next day he's going to go see what's up. Go see these bodies, basically. Hopefully they're not bodies. He goes, the next day, tomorrow, I'm going to drive back out there and see what's up. So sure enough, the next day, he gets onto that dirt road, and he's driving down the dirt road. And he realizes his first guess was right, far beyond anything he could have even thought. He goes, I was driving down that dirt road. I got a sense that there wasn't really a car accident there. I'm driving down that dirt road. I don't see the car. I don't see the truck on the side of the road. I don't see either person. The person's not waving anymore. There's not a body on the ground. There's no more waving. But that's not all. He goes, I drove down that dirt road, and as I'm coming down that road, I realized there is no part of this road that has tall, thick grass. But it's even weirder than that. Because Tony said, I drove down this dirt road that I've driven down 100 times before. There was no sharp right turn. Just driving down that dirt road, driving down that dirt road, driving down that dirt road. There was no sharp right-hand turn. And at this point, he's starting to realize, like, as he's driving down the road, you imagine he's sweating profusely at this point. He goes, if what happened was real, I mean, again, think about how this would just blow your mind. You would initially think, at the worst, right, if he had a funny feeling about it, you'd think maybe it was like brigands. Maybe it was like some carjackers or something like that trying to set a trap. But that's one thing, right? That's terrifying enough. But then imagine that it didn't exist at all. There was no sharp right-hand turn. He says the way that the road is laid out, he goes, I would have seen that truck hundreds of yards before I even got to a supposed right-hand turn. Because it's all just flat. He goes, I was driving, and when I saw the turn and I made the turn, that's when everything was there all of a sudden. And he said that the way that that truck was placed, he goes, I would have had a really hard time moving around it. But somehow, none of that was a factor. He couldn't see the truck coming up. And again, I want to reiterate, there is no sharp right-hand turn, but none of the physics of the story worked. If the car was this truck in the position it was in, it would have almost completely blocked the road. He wouldn't have been able to just swerve around it. And he said, he goes, listen, I've driven that road many times before. I've actually driven down that road many times since. I've never seen that curve again. That was posted online by someone going by the name Kills on Top. It's really interesting. I could discuss a bunch of different weird things about it. One, and I'll try to keep it brief, but one is, again, the physics of the paranormal is so weird. Like, whatever this was, he knew in the real world a truck angled like that would have completely blocked the road, but when he made this right-hand turn, wherever he went, whatever possible experience happened, he was able to easily move around the truck, which makes you think that it might have all just been an illusion. None of it may have actually been there in the first place. Well, that's kind of what's implied. But the question is, when he made this turn, was the turn into an alternate reality? Was the turn into a hologram? We don't know. But that place doesn't exist where he went. And he moved past it, and he followed his guts and didn't respond to the issue, didn't respond to the situation. What's so terrifying about this to me is the idea of this trap was set for good Samaritans. This trap was not set for selfish people. This trap was not set for egotistical people. This trap was set for people of a kind heart and a helpful nature. The best of us. That's what makes this story so terrifying. And we see this type of thing in real life. A lot of serial killers, Ted Bundy very famously did this, they prey on good-hearted people. One of his big gimmicks was he had a fake cast on and he was having trouble putting his bicycle on top of his car, and a young woman would walk up and go, do you need help with that? And he's like, yeah, sure. That was who he was going to kill that day. Everyone who walked by and didn't pay him any mind, they were not victims. To be a victim of a killer, a lot of times, not trying to victim blame or anything, but a lot of times it does require the victim to be trusting, to go back to their place, to take the car ride. You have that feature of it. So that's creepy, right? Because it just preys on our best nature. Imagine that. Imagine driving down the road and seeing someone injured. Like, some of us, forget the paranormal side of it, some of us just keep driving. I'm not saying I'm a good person at all. I'm not definitely wearing that mantle. I have gotten out of my car during car accidents. I've done it quite a lot over the years, and I was repaid by that by watching two people die, and I couldn't, two separate times, watch two people die, and there's nothing I could do to stop it. I talked about one of those on the podcast. I don't even know if that episode ever gets like replayed because I don't remember what notes I put in there. But I watched a woman die while she was the passenger, while the driver was screaming, I can't feel my legs or I can't feel my body. She was paralyzed and she's screaming. And then a bunch of other people showed up and they're like, oh my God, she's a mother. She has kids at home. And I'm watching this woman die. And they're like, she can't die. She can't die. She has kids at home. That's not fun. That wasn't a fun memory. There was nothing I could do to stop it. And the second time that happened, I jumped out of my car. I watched a woman. She had gotten hit by a car. And I watched her inflate. I didn't know what was going on at the time. But what I realized afterwards was that she had such huge internal bleeding, she was inflating like a balloon. And that was the time when we were, you know, it was late at night. She got hit by a car. She was crossing the street outside of the crosswalk. And we didn't know what to, there was like maybe five of us. All these cars were pulling over. There's about five of us. And none of us knew what to do. Like she was dying in front of us. It's not CPR. It's nothing. She wasn't bleeding out. She was bleeding from within. I remember picking up her smashed cell phone and I go, I can do this. I'm a tech guy. I can do this. I thought I can fix her cell phone. And I can let someone know what's going on. And I remember reassembling the phone. And I clicked the last recent calls button or whatever. It was like old. This was before smartphones. You couldn't do this nowadays. The screen would just be demolished. But it's like just one of those old phones. And I remember I hit the button and it showed the last 10 calls. And I remember that's when the thought popped in my head. These are the last 10 people who will ever speak to her. Ever. And I looked at it for a second and I had that horrible realization. And then I went to call the last person she talked to. And the phone died. And I am mad. People have told me this before too. They go, and I think this is a fair assumption. They go, Jason, you weren't supposed to make that phone call. Like, that's why the phone, because it shouldn't have died, right? I had fixed it. I wasn't going to make that. I wasn't supposed to make a phone call. But anyway, you're like, wow, Jason, go back to the arm in the grass. That's sad. Terrifying. So, yeah, you know, but I can't say that. I mean, like, here's the thing. I know when I read this story, I would never proclaim myself to be a good person. I have all the faults that everybody else does, plus some. But I would generally, I can't say I would do it 100% of the time, but if I saw this, I probably would get out. I probably would stop the car and at least yell, are you okay? Yeah, it's just creepy. And then, you know, the whole thing is like, what was it? What was going on here? Was it an alternate dimension? Was it some reality warping cryptid? We've talked about that before on the podcast. Like, if you had a this would basically be the same thing as a trapdoor spider. Where it's kind of altering reality or what's there to create this illusion. And if you have a good sense about it, you would realize, no, I'm not going to go there. I'm sure every so often there's a lizard going like, I don't know, that dirt. I don't like the look of that dirt. It feels different than the dirt this way. I'm going to go this way. And they don't get eaten by the trapdoor spider. But the other spider who doesn't really follow their instincts, their lunch. Creepy story. Creepy story. One, because we don't know what it is. I love paranormal stories like that. We have zero clue of what this is. Interdimensional, cryptid, alien, possibly. We've covered stories about aliens pretending to be police vehicles, emergency vehicles to get people to slow down, and then they're abducted. We've covered stories where an alien impersonated a gas station to get people to pull it. The alien didn't become the pump and become like the snack counter, but the idea that the UFO and the alien created this illusion to get people to pull over. So, creepy story. And again, extra creepy because it really tries to get the people who want to help. Maybe those people, maybe the least selfish amongst us, are the tastiest treats. But you're like, Jason, are you calling yourself a tasty treat? You said you'd help people. I don't consider myself a tasty treat. I don't consider myself not selfish either. But, you know, I'll still pull over and help. If I see, you're like, Jason, that's the least we expect of you. If you see an unconscious man at the side of the road to help him out. Be careful, though. Be careful. Oracle relationship. Let's go ahead and toss you the keys to the world famous Carpenter Copter. We're leaving behind Montana. Why don't you fly us all the way out to California? We're headed all the way out to California. The year is 2008. And we're specifically headed to Northern California, right on the border of California and Nevada. We're about to meet this young boy. Let's call him Timothy. He's 13 years old. Timothy is sitting in an RV and his dad is driving it. They're headed up to this camping spot up in Northern California. It's going to be awesome. It's going to be great because not only is it going to be some father-son bonding time, they're going to do some camping, setting a campfire, roasting marshmallows, all that stuff. They're also going hunting. It's good father-son bonding or father-child to do with your daughter. I don't care. But you walk around with a shotgun and you just annihilate things. Squirrel running through the tree. Not anymore, dude. Deer standing majestically. Sunset perfectly silhouetting the antlers. Nope. That deer falls down. Elk walking by. Okay. Timothy and his father are headed up to the border up in the mountains to go camping. It's going to be a lot of fun. Who doesn't like going camping? I hate camping, actually. But the reason why I hate camping is because it's really cold and very spooky. However, Timothy and his dad have solved at least two of those problems. One, they're driving an RV, so they're not going to be, like, in a tent. So when you wake up and it's, like, 23 degrees and your teeth are frozen shut. Also, you lose a little bit of the spook factor as well, because not only are they in an RV, but they're also hunting, so they have guns. So these dudes, they're set. They're loaded for bear, literally. Now, Timothy also, they're going to like spend some time in the woods. They're going to do some four-wheeling. So they probably brought their quads up. Dude, how much stuff do these guys carry? They have an RV and quads? Anyways, they're driving their quads. They're going over like trails and stuff like that. Just running over squirrels left and right. I've never gone four-wheeling. Anyways, they're four-wheeling. I'm super jealous of these guys, and you have no idea what's about to happen. They're on their quads. They're kicking up dust all over the hills. Driving down these roads. And when all of a sudden, a large black Escalade, big SUV, goes flying past Timothy and his dad. And then, you're like, Cookie Monster? Cookie Monster showed up? No, that was four more black SUVs go flying down this road. And Dad looks back at Timothy, and Timothy's like, oh, that's weird. He just kind of shrugged it off. Like, you know, sure, they have those fancy cars, but we have quads. They continue driving around. That night, it's 9 p.m. They got to go to bed early to wake up early. To go and kill a bunch of living things. Go shoot an elk right between the eyes. So they go to bed. But only for a little bit. Because by the time 10:47 comes around. Timothy noted this time. It's 10:47. He wakes up. Because he heard this really loud noise. He wakes up and he sees. So him and his dad are sleeping in separate beds. He wakes up and he sees. Standing over his father's bed. Is a gray alien. That's not really the word that's used in this narrative so much, but he describes it as a short gray figure with a huge head, large black eyes, and a small mouth. So, a gray alien, basically. I mean, it's not the mummy, it's not Dracula. A gray alien, and it totally terrifies Timothy. He can't even move. He hears this loud noise, he wakes up, there's a gray alien standing over his father. And he's just frozen in fear, just staring at this thing. And time is passing, right? He doesn't know what to do. He doesn't know what to think. He is laying there staring at this thing for about a minute or two. He looks over at the clock. It's 12:17. So an hour and a half passed while he was looking at this thing, but he's like, that was not the case. Literally is like a minute or two. After that, he couldn't get back to sleep. The next morning, sun comes up. And Timothy, I don't think his dad's awake yet. because it didn't appear that he was in the story. But Timothy wakes up first, and because of the event, he didn't go back to sleep, right? The sun comes up, and he wants to know what was out there, or what was in there. He wanted to know what was in the RV. So he grabbed one of the shotguns, and he walks outside of the RV. And in the tiniest amount of morning light that is shining through the forest, he sees hundreds of little footprints around the RV. Not like there were 100 of these things, but something, it looked like something kept circling the RV. And then he sees a path of these footprints starting to lead into the woods. He begins to follow them. He's kind of moving through the forest as quietly as he can when he all of a sudden sees a shed. There's a shed off of the campground, and it is surrounded by the 5 black Escalades. Timothy's watching from the bushes. And he begins to hear these horrific sounds. Just absolutely terrifying to him. He described it as the sound, it sounded like metal scraping, but at the same time, it sounded completely alien. It sounded completely non-terrestrial, which is a weird juxtaposition. We all know what the sound of metal scraping together. We've all seen a Transformers movie. But even knowing that this is what it sounded like, metal scraping, there was still something so inhuman about the sound. He turned and he ran back to the RV. Even though he was not simply safe because he was hiding, right? He wasn't right up next to the shed. He was still in the bushes looking at this thing. Even though he knew that there were humans, I mean, you would presume humans were in the SUVs, you presume it was the government. Still, the sounds coming from the shed struck him with such terror that he turned and he ran all the way back to the RV. Timothy said, "I was only there for just a couple minutes." And then there was a knock at the door. At this point, Dad is up. And they open the door, and standing outside the door is a worker from the campground. One of the guys who helped maintain the area. He goes, "Hey guys, I hate to break to you, but you gotta leave. There's been an incident. Something's happened here at the hunting grounds, and you gotta leave. You gots to go." And so they did. Dad's like, "Oh, okay. Sorry to hear that, you know." Probably thinking someone must have gotten shot, an accident, you know, someone's lost and they need to canvas the area. Okay, you know. Fires up the RV, decides to head back home. Timothy said, just like in that first story, he goes, "I have never had any sort of paranormal event. I had never had anything like this before or since. It was a one-time thing. Totally chilled him to the core." But he also says, "I wonder if I was abducted." Because of that 2 hours or an hour and a half of lost time, Timothy wonders if when he was 13 years old, he was abducted by aliens. There's kind of an interesting setup to this story. So this story was sent to me. I'm changing some of the, or all of the names, really. I got an email from a listener. We'll call her Sabrina. Her friend, who we'll call Michelle, had recently moved to a new area. And she started dating and she started meeting all of these guys, going out on all these different dates. And then one night she met Timothy, which is a fake name. I have all the real names, but I just, you know, I asked, "Do you want me to use fake names?" And Sabrina said, "Yeah." When Michelle started dating Timothy, like really not even dating, their first date or second date, they're at a bar and he goes, "Dude, you won't believe what happened to me." And he told the story about when he was 13 years old and he's all, "And then it was terrifying and I ran through the bushes." That was the setup for this story. It's interesting. I mean, I talk about the boo pill, right? I talk about, I have often used. Girls and women have a lot of interest in the paranormal, so a lot of times I'll be like, I'm a ghost hunter. I'm a paranormal researcher. Girls love that stuff. Yeah, it's the weirdest thing in the world, but it works. It totally works. I call it the boo pill. I use it to pick up women. Jason, is that what this whole podcast is about? You're like, you know what's funny is I've learned over the years, I do not tell women I do a paranormal podcast because that is just like, no. But if I say that I'm a paranormal researcher, then I'm like, oh, you believe in ghosts? I was like, yeah, man, totally, totally believe in ghosts. I sound more sincere than that because I do believe in ghosts, but you know what I mean? Like, that does work. I would advise people from just using it willy-nilly. I'd also advise people that women love ghosts. Don't know if they're huge fans of alien abduction. They're like, well, you know, I'm looking for an alpha male, not some beta who got abducted by an alien. Oh, man. I was only 13 years old. And the reason why I say all that is that it almost makes the story seem more true. Now, I did go out on a blind date once and tell the woman I was turning into a vampire. I was trying to get the stupid date to end. I was like, maybe if I'm... Because I didn't want to be rude, but I didn't want to continue the date. I told her that I thought I was turning into a vampire because sometimes I could feel my organs shifting, which was true. I never figured out what that was, but sometimes I'd feel stuff in my body move around. Not like gas pain. Like, it felt like my liver and my stomach and other body organs are actually shifting. Not actually a vampire. But I remember when I had those sensations, I go, dude, what if I'm morphing into a vampire? I didn't. I can still go out in the sun. I can still eat garlic. I remember telling, I was blind date. I was like, dude. And I told her that I was talking to a cookie in my fridge named Grigo. Which, to be fair, I did have a cookie in my fridge called Grigo. I bought it at Starbucks. It was an alien cookie. And I had had it for maybe 4 years in my kitchen. And I remember it was in my fridge. And I remember thinking, dude, that'd be nuts if, like, I've kept him in my fridge for so long, he becomes alive. That's what I think about. That's what I think about. Oh, cookies can live. Those Keebler elves. All that propaganda messed with my brain. I did think, oh, that'd be crazy if this cookie could start talking to me. So when I was on that blind date, I was like, yeah, okay, vampire thing didn't work. She's like, I love vampires. I was like, well, do you love talking cookies? She's like, oh, that's adorable. It's like, oh my God, please let this end. It's a little audacious to come out and on date one or two talk about the whole alien abduction possibly. At the very least, right, hearing government agents torture an alien or whatever was going on in that shed. Again, it's funny, when I put these two stories together, I didn't really think of it at the time, but I'm going to title this episode The Unseen, which I think I've actually used that title before. It really is that unseen terror that gets the imagination going. At least on this one, we do know it's alien-based. He did wake up and see that alien. And it plays into a part, you know, the government agents and stuff like that coming out and capturing the alien. I mean, it's funny. Sometimes I think, like, I get stories. Oh, so I should say, Sabrina listens to the podcast. Sabrina's listened to the podcast for a long time as well. And she sent this over to me. She's like, big fan of the podcast. I wanted to tell you this story that my friend told me that she heard on a date. One thing I do love about this story, though, is that, and we've talked about this before on the podcast, the only reason why this is a story, the only reason why any of this is being told is because Timothy woke up. Let's do the whole story. He doesn't wake up. They're out on their quads, five black SUVs roar past them. They didn't even pay it any mind. They go to bed early that night. They wake up the next morning. They're awake for maybe like 10, 20 minutes. There's a knock at the door and a guy goes, you gotta leave. There's an incident. There's been an incident here on the hunting grounds. You gotta leave. Okay. Now, I'm not saying that none of the stuff happened. It did happen, but it's only because Timothy woke up in the middle of the night that he saw the gray alien, that he was curious to find out what it was, so he walked outside the RV, saw the footprints, followed the footprints, got to the shed, heard the screaming. If he didn't wake up, all that stuff still happens. The alien's in the RV. The alien's walking around the RV multiple times. The alien gets into the RV. Everyone's asleep. The alien exits the RV, walks to the shed, is surrounded by the government agents. The metal screeching noises all still happen, but Timothy doesn't know any of it. Timothy and his father are driving the RV back home. The only reason this is a story is because Timothy woke up. The only reason why he even possibly thinks he was abducted was because he woke up. How many times are people abducted in the middle of the night? You only notice lost time if you are conscious. If you go to bed at 10 p.m. and you are abducted at 1 a.m. and you are brought back at 3 a.m., still asleep, you will never be like, dude, I lost 2 hours last night. I looked at the clock and it was 2 hours. No, because you're asleep. You're asleep. You're deep asleep. They abduct you. They do all of their experiments on you. You're awake for that. You can feel the needles. You can taste the fear. But when they put you back here, you're back asleep. So you wake up, you go about your day. You have no idea that you are abducted. You do start to kind of think something because you can't watch movies with gray aliens in it, or every so often you'll have like some weird nightmare, like because you're remembering it, but it didn't really happen. You don't know that it happened. You have no reason to go to a hypnotist or a hypnotherapist or anything. You have no reason to start looking into the signs of alien abduction because you don't even know you were abducted. You don't even have a thought in your head. At least Timothy goes, maybe I was abducted. You don't have that thought. You got abducted 3 weeks ago. I got abducted last night. If you're not awake to see the time change, if you're not awake to experience the time loss, if you sleep to point of abduction and they put you back on Earth, back fast asleep, you have zero idea they ran all those experiments on you. That's absolutely terrifying. Absolutely terrifying. The idea of alien abductions, it could be so much more widespread than we could even imagine. The only reason why Timothy thinks I might have been abducted, because he woke up when he heard that noise. That gray alien didn't have two left feet or whatever it did to make that noise. It would have stood over that father and abducted probably both of them. Both father and son were probably abducted by this thing. They would have never known. They would have got a knock on their door. There was an incident. They would have drove home. That's it. But the abduction still happened. The experience was still real. They'd have zero idea that it happened. I really think that alien abductions is a completely underreported phenomenon. And that's actually not a thought I had before doing this show. I think by looking at so many alien reports, and it's so many of them are someone, the programming going wrong, the system going wrong. It's the same thing when we go to a zoo and we put a tranquilizer in a gorilla's food. The point of it is that the gorilla is going to be knocked out. We can move it from point A, take it to the vet, get those things cleared up that it's having problems with, take it back to the zoo, and then it wakes up. And we never hear about it when everything goes according to plan. The gorilla falls asleep in his enclosure. He's dead asleep, taken to the vet, and then brought back. And as far as he knows, he hasn't gone anywhere. But when that process goes wrong and it wakes up in the vet's office, it makes news. It makes the news because the process went wrong. And the gorilla's just going nuts. He was in the enclosure. He wakes up in a veterinarian's office. Even when they sedate him again and take him back to the enclosure, he's going to remember that. He's going to remember that time. And so the next time they try doing it and they're trying to make him groggy again, he'll probably fight it because he goes, the last time this happened, I woke up in a strange place. I had needles in me. They're sticking stuff into my tummy. When the process works, the animal has no idea anything's happened. When the process fails, it makes the news the same way that if someone reporting an alien abduction makes the news, this story made this podcast. Other alien abduction stories will be in the news, be in the newspaper, be on this website, be on this YouTube channel. But when the process goes according to plan, you never even know it happened. Zero idea. The implants deep enough that you don't notice a bump. The procedures go so according to plan, you don't realize that they were having you drink these fluids to watch them move through your body. Or they were pressing needles into your eyes for whatever god-awful experiment they decided they were going to do on you. When the process works, you don't know. Timothy found out because something went wrong. He heard a noise. How many times have these aliens come into our homes and we slept through the entire event because everything went according to plan? You could really start digging for the answer yourself. You could go to a hypnotherapist and say, I want to have some hypnosis done. I want to see if I have any repressed memories about any particular events. You could do that. Honestly, you pay someone to do that for you. I don't recommend it. Because you may find out stuff that is repressed for a reason. If it goes according to plan, you never even know what happened. And so the question is, how often do they mess up? And how often does it go according to plan? Because that can make the difference between a handful of alien abduction accounts every year to an epidemic of them. Have we gotten to the point where there are more people who have been abducted by aliens than there are people who have not? DeadRabbitRadio@gmail.com is going to be our email address. You can also hit us up at facebook.com/DeadRabbitRadio. TikTok is @DeadRabbitRadio. Dead Rabbit Radio is the daily paranormal, conspiracy, and true crime podcast. You don't have to listen to it every day, but I'm glad you listened to it today. Have a great weekend, guys.